Everyone, John Wertheim here. Beyond the Baseline is brought to you by Harry's Razors. Superior. We emphasize that. We boldface it. We take a yellow highlighter to it. Superior razors ship straight to your door at half the drugstore prices. Get $5 off your first order with the code BASELINE at harrys.com. We're also sponsored by FanDuel now that baseball's back. Try the fun and competition of daily fantasy risk-free up to 10 bucks. Go to FanDuel.com and enter the code BEYOND.
I love tennis. I don't love the governing body of tennis sometimes. I feel like as players, you want to stand up for justice and you can't fight City Hall. That's the way I feel a lot of times. Obviously, when you're top 10, you have more power. And I feel that the top 10 women are doing nothing with their power, and they have been doing nothing. Since I was 18 in the world, they've been doing nothing, and it's really sad to see. Billie Jean King is still out there fighting for women, and she's not even playing. Somebody needs to step up and take her place.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast, Beyond the Baseline. A few weeks ago, two of you actually suggested we try and find Alexandra Stevenson and figure out what she is up to. We tracked her down at a clay event in Alabama. She's still playing. She's ranked, as of this week, 545. But as you will hear, that is not a deterrent. She has some very lofty goals. This is an interesting conversation. It goes in several unexpected directions. I won't give away too much, but it's the first podcast we've done that's hit on Jennifer Lopez, Jack Kerouac, Henry VIII, and Donald Trump. But she is an animated personality, and it's interesting in her mid-30s that she's still out there playing. Obviously, people know her for her Wimbledon breakthrough in 1999. They also, of course, know her for her parentage. We talk about both of those topics, and it's interesting also just to get the perspective of a player who was in the top 20, you know, many years ago in her early 20s and in her mid-30s is still out there under much less glamorous circumstances. So, without further ado, let's bring her in now from Alabama, Alexandra Stevenson. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. You played today on a rainy day on clay court tennis, and I was in an office, and I'm thinking I may have gotten the better of that.
Yeah, I think, were you in New York City?
I was in New York City.
Oh, are you? Yeah, well, then you definitely had it better than me. I'm out here on, unfortunately, America has become a clay court nightmare.
Sounds like a book
every
title.
Every single tournament in the USGA circuit happens to be on clay now. I think they think we're sane.
We're making inroads.
Yeah.
I was just telling our producer, Jamie, I don't even know where to start with you. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
I've kind of been underground.
All right, start there. What's your life like? Where are you at with things?
Well, my shoulder is 100% healthy, and that took a really long time. And I'm playing and playing matches and winning and losing and not having any shoulder pain. So that's a really big blessing in my life. And that's where I'm at right now, is everything's great because my shoulder does not hurt and I can play tennis. Now I'm just trying, you know, I'm trying to come back and get to the top 50 of women's tennis. And it's been a long road, and I'm kind of still working really hard at it.
So tell us where you are today. It rained and it was clay, and there are a lot of clay events for reasons we can talk about later. But you're in Alabama, right?
Yes, I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, and actually this is kind of funny. I'm staying right now at my doctor's house, Dr. Dugas, who along with Dr. Andrews did my shoulder surgery. So I'm staying with him and his family, and they're amazing. And Caroline and Chris are their kids, and they're in high school, and Tracy's his wife, and she's cooking for us. And so it's a great situation at their house. It's just not a good situation that I'm on clay.
I got bad news for you. I'm looking at the schedule. You got a little more clay before you get on the cement.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of clay. And But the good news was, you know, I came here and I don't have a shoulder issue. So I got to see Dr. Dugas and say, my shoulder feels amazing. So that was really a pretty big deal.
And you got to meet Dr. Andrews too, who I always say is one of the most underrated figures in U.S. sports right now.
Yes. I haven't seen Dr. Andrews because he's been in Pensacola. So I haven't seen him this trip. But he's a pretty special guy. I mean, I only had one surgery. It took a long time, but other players have had multiple surgeries with this shoulder, and I feel like I'm one of the few women who has come back from this injury that I had. I know Jennifer Capriati is really, you know, sure she lets everybody know she's upset she can't play. And I've been through what she's been through. I just, you know, was able to come out and I'm able to serve and play again.
And is this what these events are like? You sometimes you stay with friends or you stay with acquaintances you've made through the years? I mean, what's
the
life like?
Well, let me tell you. So this circuit thing, which my first 5 years on tour, I was maybe in a couple challengers when I was 17 and 18. And because the WTA tour was a totally different tour from 2008 when they switched everything around, you were able to play qualifying of WTA if you're ranked, like, even if you're ranked 600, you could get into qualifying. Now if you're ranked 192, you're not going to get in.
Right.
So what I've seen out here coming back with my shoulder and being in the trenches is that it's become the WTA tour out here. It's no longer a minor league. I think the minor leagues in baseball are actually easier than the IGF tour. Women from 40, 50, 60, all the way down to, you know, 700 can play tennis now, and they're packing the main draws from 80 to 200 is the main draw, and that's, you know, qualifying of WTA and Grand Slams. So you're out here each week trying to get points, and then you're up against players that already have points and they're taking up spaces in the draw because the women don't have a play down rule like the men do.
And you're doing this why?
Well,
what's the goal here? What's going to define success?
Well, why are you out here? My ultimate goal I won't share with you.
Okay.
But it's a big goal, and I feel like I got stopped right when I got to top 20 is when I hurt my shoulder when I got to 18 in the world. And, you know, it was really unfortunate because I was becoming a really great player and learning how to play the game, and I had a lot of goals, and I just kind of got the door slammed on me. And then I got forgotten about and thrown away for the trash in the tennis world, kind of. You know, everybody drops you. It's the same old thing. The phone doesn't ring anymore. And I feel like I still have a lot of tennis left in me, and I'm a fighter, and I don't like to give up on things. And I've worked really hard to get my shoulder healthy, and now I can go out there and play and, you know, just play tennis. It's been a really long road. But I wasn't willing to walk away. I mean, why walk away when you have a healthy body? Doesn't matter what age you are. I'm sure this has been a topic of conversation for you in the press and, you know, in the tennis world for a couple years. You've seen it coming, that there really is no longer like 30-year-olds. I mean, look at Kimiko Date. What is she, 44 now? You can still play tennis.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, mid-30s is nothing now.
Yeah, so I feel like the narrative is changing very slowly. Tennis is still about 30 years behind the rest of the world. But
in what ways? Where to begin?
Don't get me started. I mean, we can do the whole equal pay thing. We can do the age. You know, Cameron Diaz just wrote a book, Longevity. So
I saw that.
I think everybody in the tennis world should read that book.
Wait, can we take a brief detour? I want to get back to all this, but you were there. This was just kind of crawling on my social media feed yesterday. What was the deal with speaking of longevity? Taylor Townsend at the event where we're talking, where you are right now, looked to have played a 69-year-old woman.
Yeah, speaking of longevity.
That's longevity
well,
for
actually,
you. Take that, Cameron
yeah,
Diaz.
I mean, come on.
Well, what was the story there? What happened?
Well, this lady, I actually don't even know her name because I was focusing on my match, but I did go out and see a couple points. I think she played another girl in the first round. What happened was, I think, because of Fed Cup, the quali draw, the lower-ranked quali draw kind of fell apart because the girls maybe in the mid-ranks that can play in their countries for Europe that aren't top players that play Fed Cup pulled out. And so because the USTA does 64 draws in 25,000, which they really should do only 32, that's a whole nother thing, no ranking gets in. And she signed up and got in, and she won her first match. And wow. I have no idea who she played in the first round. I think she was a young girl, and she beat her. And so Taylor, I practiced with the day before, and Taylor told me who she was playing, and I said, are you serious? And she said, yep. And I said, well, good for her. She won her match. And, you know, Taylor wasn't the happiest camper because it was kind of unexpected, but,
right.
you know, she respectfully, the lady hit a ball in the net, and Taylor went around and picked it up because out here we don't have ball kids. Like, the men on the ATP, they own the ITF circuit. I'm not sure of the logistics about that, but they demand ball kids and full umpires, and the women get nothing. So we're out here picking up our own balls.
So, this was jarring video watching Taylor Townsend play a 69-year-old in a professional sanctioned match. But
yeah, I was so shocked that it was such big news, actually.
Yeah, I think
because,
you know, it just gets
well,
in someone's
I think
feed, and then
when you're out here in the middle of nowhere in Pelham, you don't realize that even Pelham is big news that a 69-year-old won a match. But hey, that's pretty cool.
That's social media for you. So. You're picking up your own balls, and there are no ball kids, and I don't know what the officiating situation
call,
is. I was gonna say you're calling your own lines
round.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you were, Phil Knight flew to Wimbledon to see you. You were top 20 in the world at one point. Has this been jarring? Is this something you've gotten used to by now? I mean, what is this like for you?
Well, no, you never get used to it because if you get used to it, then you shouldn't be out there. I think it's shocking because to me it's shocking that, you know, I've always been somebody to stand up for justice, and sometimes it's gotten me into trouble, but, you know, it's always been important to tell the truth and fight for what's right. And when you see all these women and even the men will tell you too, when you see everybody working so hard out here and they're good players, it's not like, you know, yes, the 69-year-old won her first match, but the majority of the group of players out here can all play tennis. I'm sure you've seen it. They sneak in Grand Slams and
sure,
get to
sure,
the fourth
sure,
round.
Sure.
Or look at Joanna Konta. She's now like 20 in the world or
right.
something. She was out here last year with me. And you see the lack of respect you get, and they just throw you out in a court that's sometimes not regulated, or it rains and there's holes in the court and you have to go play. And you go, why am I doing this? And you go, well, because I love tennis. And when you've been to the top of tennis and played at Grand Slams and played at the big tournaments, it's amazing. But then when you come to the bottom, you're still playing the game. It's just in different circumstances. And it's kind, sometimes it's really sad because you're out there picking up your own balls and the referee just wants to get the match over with, and you feel like you're part of a cattle train. So it's a very big, you know, I'm sure in the entertainment world, it's the same thing. They just maybe get paid a little more.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, when you have to pay $40 in your first match, and if you don't win it, you don't get paid in a professional sport, that really sucks. And in tennis, you know, the ITF hasn't changed. 1972, the prize money is still the same as it is now on the ITF circuit.
I was going to ask you about the finances. I mean, this is something you always hear, and it's tough even to break even, and you can win an event and still be down in your expenses. I mean, can I ask how you're managing this financially?
Well, you know, it's a journey. So if anybody out there is a billionaire who wants to sponsor me, they can call me up. You know, it's not easy. It's one of the reasons why I haven't been able to go overseas, because that's where you can really get the points. And I've been kind of stuck in the States because I don't have a sponsor. Right. So, and then you look at it and you go, well, look what I did when I was playing well. And, you know, it really doesn't matter in today's world. They just look at your age and they don't really look at your ability, and they go, oh, well, no, thanks, we'll pass. So I'm still working hard on figuring out a way to get overseas, and you know, I'm fighting out there, but it is expensive just to play a week in America. Yeah, it's hard to get there.
How does that I mean, just sort of in pragmatic terms, I mean, how does that happen? Just the Nike and IMG and all these companies and brokers that you had these relationships with, is it ranking? Do they say, look, if you're not ranked X, we can't continue to represent you? Do they just sort of say, listen, we're taking a break? I mean, how does that even sort of go down?
Well, I don't know with everybody. I know with me after my shoulder surgery, I kind of got caught in a situation where the two lead agents at IMG left, and, you know, IMG was kind of restructuring and everything really was not stable.
Right.
And my lead agents took off. So I kind of was left with no one. And, you know, then I went to other people and they were like, well, when you get to top 100, we'll think about it. It's always like, well, when you get there, instead of like, well, you actually need help getting there. So I think that's what a lot of players face that are out here, maybe in the 400s, 500s.
Right.
I think Europeans, some of them can just go to a bank and get $25,000. But in America, unfortunately, we don't have that option, or maybe if you do, I don't know anybody that does that. And so you just have to find somebody that's willing to think outside the box. And, you know, the last couple of years I've had angels help me and come and give me some funds, but you know, to play a whole year on the tour, it costs a fair bit amount to play, you know, on the WTA and on the ITF. And I'm not Canadian. I mean, maybe if I was Canadian, I'd have more help, or European. The American Tennis Association isn't going to help me. They've made that clear. So it's just kind of, you're kind of out there by yourself.
We need to find you some Bobby Axelrod. We need to find you a hedge fund investor.
Yeah. I mean, it just takes somebody that's willing to think outside the box and come on board and believe in the story and not look at the age, because your age doesn't really matter as long as your body's healthy. And I have like 8 years that I haven't used.
It's a good way to look at it. You'll get them on the back end. I can't believe.
And hey, look at Jennifer Lopez. She's in her prime and she's 46.
All right, hold that thought, Alexander Stevenson. That is quite a monologue you're on, but we've got to pay some bills here. Spring is here, and whether you're catching a game, relaxing at the beach, or just going to work, it's time to ditch the winter scruff, off with the vacation beards. You want to feel the sun on your face, and here's how you're going to do this. With a smooth shave from Harry's Razors. With Harry's, you don't just get a close, comfortable shave. You get high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price you're used to. Is there anything that isn't German-engineered, Jamie Lasanti, that isn't high-quality? We got some of these Harry's razors. I don't know if I'm supposed to reveal that. It falls below our $75 conflict of interest threshold. We got some Harry's razors ourselves here, and I will tell you firsthand and with full candor that it is an excellent shave. I've been using them. Presumably Richard Deitch has as well. Both Ben Eagle and Dan Bloom use them. If that isn't testimonial, I don't know what is. Harry's gives you factory direct prices. They cut out the middleman. They ship the products right to your door. They are excellent razors, and here's the best part. The starter set is available for just $15. You get a razor handle, foam, shave gel, 3 of Harry's 5 German-engineered razors. Did I mention the virtues of German engineering, Jamie Lasanti? For listeners of the show, Harry's giving you $5 off the purchase with the promo code BASELINE. Go to harrys.com now, harrys.com. Make sure you use the code BASELINE and check them out. Let them know who sent you. I can't believe I'm saying this, but it was 17 years ago that you made that Wimbledon semifinal run.
Uh-huh.
I
just graduated high school.
I remember, and you were going to be in the school play, and
I was in prom, and I gave up the French Open for prom.
I think that's a good move in retrospect. But
yeah,
I mean, that was literally half your life ago. I mean, how do you reflect on that? I mean, when you now look back on that summer and then, you know, the following summer,
I'm writing a book right now, so I'm reflecting a lot back on that and on my journey. It's Jack Kerouac's book, On the Road.
Sure.
Well, I'm kind of doing an On the Road book sports-wise because I've traveled most of the United States in a car to get to tournaments, and it's been quite an experience. And so looking back at Wimbledon, it's something, you know, it changed my life forever. I went in as a high school senior, just graduated, went to prom, was in Grease the Musical. I came in as me, Alexander Stevenson, and then I left as Dr. J's daughter. So
is that how you look at it?
If you want to just call a spade, it totally turned my life around. And, you know, I had to deal with the public looking at me differently as when I still saw me as me, but I had me in a whole nother layer to it.
You think that was fair? I mean, you think that was sort of in the realm of journalism?
No, of course not. I mean, do you think somebody buying your birth certificate is fair? I don't even think they allow that anymore. I think it's illegal. I think after 9/11, you can't just walk in and buy a birth certificate.
Someone other than yourself. But you don't think this was a public figure, and there was, I mean, I think there's an interesting debate to be had, honestly, about where we draw these kinds of lines and what's public.
I think the way it was handled was not right. I mean, was it going to come out? Sure. But it is what it is. I mean, it was also, when you think about it, if you can even imagine, it was before social media.
Right.
Imagine if we had social media then, I think it would have been even crazier. Because really, I was in England, and I didn't have any idea that America was like going a little nuts over all this. My aunt actually sent me a box of papers to help me out with the writing of my book that she collected, and just so much was written on that I didn't even know. It was pretty extraordinary, actually.
The story, tell me if this is tennis myth or if there's some fact to this. The story I once heard was that your mother knew this was coming and sort of generated a controversy just to basically like divert.
This is tennis
press room gossip that your mom sort of had a sense this was coming, and to throw off the scent generated a controversy in hopes that sort of the attention would go to her and away from you.
Well, I think that's a very accurate piece of information in the tennis press room. I feel that she did get warned. Actually, I know that she did get warned by Frank DeFord. Remember him?
He's my
he was at
the dear man.
He's
a lovely guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and you know, he warned her that the person had my birth certificate. And actually, I have to thank the press back then because they kind of kept him at bay and told him to let me just have my run. And so
you're talking about the reporter, not Frank. Let's be clear. You're talking not about Frank. You're talking about the reporter who.
Yes,
who
the reporter,
this.
Not okay. About Frank.
All right, let's
but
just
I think
be clear.
Frank was instrumental in keeping the reporter at bay and not having my, because I was kind of on a run until the quarters, and I was going relatively unnoticed until the third round when I beat the eighth seed. But they all kind of just tried to keep them down so it wouldn't ruin what I was doing.
Right.
And I think probably in today's world that never would have happened. And so I really appreciate that going on. But so my mom did get warned, and then she did a walkabout with the press and just happened to say, I want my daughter to marry a man and have babies one day. And that sent the British tabloids into a frenzy and created a controversy, which the next day we woke up and my mom would always walk up to this newsstand in Wimbledon Village. And she went to get the paper, and the guy was like, oh, no, no, Madam Stevenson, I have a whole stack for you. And she went, what are you talking about?
Oh, she showed her. Figured and she prominently.
Went, yeah, and she went, oh, my gosh, oh, my, I cannot believe this happened. Like, she really didn't think it was going to cause such a stir, because she didn't say anything. I mean, marrying a man to have kids isn't such a big thing to say, you would think, right? And apparently they like to spin it, and it was a big thing to say back then in the tennis world.
What if I'm thinking, if you're writing a modern day On the Road, is your mom playing the role of Neil Cassidy? I mean, what's your relationship with her? Is she traveling with you?
It's basically, I mean, it's my mom and me on the road and all our stories. And I'm from California, so when I was touring for the first 5 years of my career, I didn't really drive through the United States. And I had studied the United States in high school and then college, but I didn't really see the culture difference. And what's amazing, as you probably know now, Donald Trump is changing the narrative in the races, in the Republican races, but he's really captured what America thinks, and to see that happening is really cool. Like, I went through the elections with Bush, and then, well, I went through like three elections just traveling on the road with my shoulder and going to see Dr. Andrews in Birmingham and then playing out here in the circuits. And I think we've driven our Volvo like three times across the country. And, you know, the first 5 years of my career, I was always on a plane. I wasn't driving anywhere.
But so your mom is still, what's your relationship with her is still strong as ever? She's still a integral part of your career?
Yeah, I mean, she's my biggest cheerleader. And, you know, I don't have any, like, I'm not upset that I'm 35 and I still live with my mom, because we're a team. And, you know, without her, I wouldn't be playing tennis today, because I probably would have had a meltdown. Well, I did have many meltdowns, and she was always there to pick up the pieces and to, you know, say, come on, you can do it. And, you know, when you're a great tennis player that can play at a high level, and then all of a sudden it's just taken away from you, not because of anything you did, it's devastating. And what? So she's been there every step of the way, including watching my surgery.
Oh, wow. Can I ask what your relationship with your dad is?
Sure, you can ask that.
I remember the, I don't know if it was the E60 or it was an Outside the Line piece, you know, maybe four, five, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Where you had reconciled with him. Is he, well, how do you characterize what kind of part of your life he is?
I don't know about reconciled. I mean, I had never met the guy, so I didn't have any grudge against him.
Right.
You know, I grew up it was a pretty idyllic childhood the way I grew up. I grew up on Sail Bay in Pacific Beach in a one-bedroom apartment, and it was just my mom and me, and I never really had any issues that I didn't have a dad, because she created such a great childhood for me that I went to plays, I played tennis, I did swimming. It was just a great childhood, growing up in San Diego on the beach. How much better can that be? And I never really asked about a dad. It just is what it is. And then I go to Wimbledon and there's like all this stuff going on. And I was like, what's the big deal? Like, I never really thought it was such a big deal, including that he had a statue in Philadelphia. She took me to that when I was 13. And I was like, oh, why does he have a statue?
You remember how old you were when you were first told?
I think I was before, but then I went to, I think I was 7 or 8 when I came home with a flyer, and I told my mom I wanted to go to this basketball thing because he was putting it on and he was coming to San Diego, and I think she almost passed out and like called a child psychologist. And the child psychologist said, well, let her go. And so I went, and I stood in line to get an autograph signed on a basketball.
Oh, right. I remember the story. Right,
yeah,
right.
I called this on ESPN, and then I threw it back at him, and I was like, I don't want your autograph.
He said, you know, I want, yeah. And you, yeah, he thought you were a fan that wanted an autograph.
I did meet him at 7 just because I wanted to go see who he was. And then I was done. I didn't need to, you know, I've never been dramatic that way. Maybe that's why I like watching Housewives show on Bravo. Do you ever watch the Housewives?
I'm gonna take the 5th on that one.
Okay,
I've seen a few Housewives.
Entertainment. So you know, there's all this drama, and I just feel like I've never been that way.
Right.
And then to meet him and to see his other family, it was like, whoa! It was like a Tyler Perry movie. It was a lot of stuff, and that's not kind of my personality. And it was like landing on Mars.
Do you speak to him regularly? Like what's the status of the relationship now?
Oh, well, I haven't talked to him in about a couple years, actually. You know, I really tried to understand him, and you know, it is what it is. He has his own life, and he let me know that he had his own life and his own family to take care of. And I said, okay, it was nice to get to know you. So that's kind of what happened. I mean, it's not really any big thing. I kind of feel like, you know, King Henry VIII had Elizabeth, and she ended up queen. So, you know, I really like that story.
Wait, which way does that cut?
I'm kind of throwing you off there. I don't know which way it goes. You know, Elizabeth was a great queen of England, and her father was never in her life, and she got to know him a little bit and then didn't really after that. So it is what it is.
That's interesting. So you may never speak to him again, and sounds like you're sort of...
Well, you know, I feel like this is a silly pun. The ball is in his court. You know, he has a lot to come to me about, because you don't write a book about your family and say what you say without telling them, and then they get blindsided by it. That's the way I feel. I mean, I've never written anything badly about him. And he did a lot to my mother that he wrote about in a book, and I don't feel it was fair. And that's all I'll say on that.
You, according to the WTA Media Guide, you read
a
book.
Yeah, well, that's like so
you read a book.
Old.
You read a book a day. Does that need updating?
Does that mean what?
Does that need updating? Did something get lost in translation?
Probably. That probably does need updating, but I do read a lot of books. Probably not a day. I don't know where they got. I read a book a day. Maybe like a book every 2 weeks.
This would be the first time Media Guide information wasn't accurate.
I know that. Yeah, I'm sure. Those media guys. You always. I mean, I don't even think that's been updated since 2004.
Hey everyone, we are heading into French Open preview time. We are heading into the tune-ups in Europe on the clay, but baseball season is already underway and it's time to get in the game. Find your Carl Tuffy Rhodes. Figure out why Matt Harvey is struggling to start the season this year. It can be so much fun because you can be more than a fan. Run your own team on FanDuel. Get your inner Billy Bean on. It's the most fun you can have as a baseball fan. It's not just for the stats experts. It's for every fan, from casual players to the hardcore seamheads. People use the word seamhead, Jamie? They do. You nod your head. Set up a listener league with your friends or play to win cash from fans around the world. Entry fees start at just $1. There's no season-long commitment. Play for one day. Play for the whole season plus the playoffs. And here's how you do it. Go to FanDuel.com. Enter the code BEYOND. Enter a league, start one with your friends, and if you don't win any prizes in your first contest, you know what? No problem. It's like a do-over at home plate. You get $10 right back to your FanDuel account. FanDuel.com, enter the code BEYOND, get a risk-free tournament up to $10. Is tennis is still fun for you?
Yeah, I love tennis. I don't love the governing body of tennis sometimes. I feel like as players, you want to stand up for justice and you can't fight City Hall. That's the way I feel a lot of times. Obviously, when you're top 10, you have more power. And I feel that the top 10 women are doing nothing with their power, and they have been doing nothing. Since I was 18 in the world, they've been doing nothing, and it's really sad to see.
What would you do?
Billie Jean King is still out there fighting for women, and she's not even playing. Somebody needs to step up and take her place. That's how I feel.
What would you do? What would be some of the issues you'd be interested in addressing if you were a top 10 player?
Well, I mean, first of all, you'd have to totally come in and redo the WTA. And you'd have to make more opportunity for all players. And, you know, they've cut the draws on the tour to 16 qualifying.
Right.
Do you know that?
Right.
Yeah. Well, nobody ever talks about that because they don't care about qualifiers. Well, how do your young players, they're always talking about the next best thing. How do the young players come up? Well, if you have a country who funds you and gives you unlimited money, they'll come up eventually, but it's taking 5 years instead of two. If you don't have a country, you're kind of in trouble. You have to have backers behind you to do it. You'd have to, you know, the WTA has never been branded. I mean, I'm sure you've talked about this. I still go on the street, they go, oh, do you know Serena and do you play for the ATP? Or they say Davis Cup. You're like, excuse me? They never say, do you know Roger Federer? It's always, do you know Serena Williams? So Serena, as she said in Indian Wells, said, you know, more people probably know me than Federer and Nadal. But the WTA has never come together and figured it out, and it's just shocking to me. When I was playing, there was like four CEOs coming in and out, and they never got anything done except collecting a paycheck.
Who are you still in touch with that were your contemporaries in the late 90s? I mean, players have gone on, and some are in the sport, and some are out of the sport, and some are...
Late 90s? Excuse me, it was 2000. Don't age me more.
What was the year of your Wimbledon breakthrough?
Well, that was like my first month on the tour.
But what?
That was 99.
Early 2000s. Who are you still close with? Or who? I mean, at one point, we actually had it in Australia. There was a tennis magazine cover that I think was you, Lindsay Davenport, Monica Seles, and Capriotti, I think. Who are you still close with?
We never shot that together.
The old Photoshop?
Shot it separately.
The 2000
it.
Photoshop.
Yeah.
Who are you still? Are you friends with the Williams sister still? I mean, who were your connections?
Well, actually, I haven't really been in touch with anybody in the last maybe 4 years. I mean, when Serena had her issue with her lung, I called her up and I went over to her house to make sure she was okay. And that was, what was that, four or five years ago?
Yeah, 2011, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll always be there for them, but we've all gone in different directions. And they have so many people around them that if you want to keep a friendship, you have to keep it going. It's not really both sides. So I kind of just had to do my own thing and, you know, get my arm healthy. And they were doing their own thing, which was fine. So pretty much no one. I mean, I have tennis people on the road that there's coaches all throughout the United States that I keep in touch with. But player-wise, not really... I mean, nobody. I've kind of gone off the radar.
So people sometimes write in and they suggest guests, and your name had come up a few times, and it was always in the sort of like, I wonder what she's up to now. What do you want people to know about you? You're obviously still out there playing, and you have goals to get back in the top 100. And I think you raise a good point that your age is, first of all, you know, mid-30s is not what it used to be in terms of a sports career, but also sometimes when you have years and years of inactivity, you can get those years back. What else do you want people to know about you?
Well, I feel that I'd like people to know that I'm a fighter and that, you know, life gets hard, as everybody knows. And, you know, sometimes in the sports world, they don't portray that there's ups and downs as much. You know, in the entertainment, you're hot and you're cold, and sometimes you're cold for years and then you get hot. Well, in the sports world, you could be cold and then just go away and not get hot again. But I feel like there's a chance now, and the tour is open. And if you have the right resources and you take care of your body and you can, you know, nutrition is such a big thing. I'm doing something really cool in Scottsdale with a place called Cerulean, and it's all about recovery and increasing your VO2 and, you know, increasing your longevity. And this really cool guy started this company called Cerulean. And I'm not going to tell you too much about it because it's just a startup, but they've been working with me for about 2 months, and I can really tell the difference. And it's all just natural things, and you can stay out there a long time. And I still have a lot to give, I feel, in tennis. That's one of the reasons why I haven't, you know, walked away. I also would like to do a third career. I feel like this is my second career right now, but I'm not finished with it. And then my third career, I'd like to go into sports and entertainment. And, you know, there needs to be some more women out there with voices in sports and entertainment world. That's what I feel.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you're thinking about sort of what, you know, what's the next 40 years? What do you see yourself doing in sports and entertainment?
Well, I have my college degree, so I have that done. I did want to go to Yale School of Drama when I was like 25, but tennis got in the way of that, and I was okay with that. I'd like to do hosting. I'd like to blend pop culture and sports together because I feel like they go hand in hand, you know, just like fashion and music. And it's with social media, it's more prevalent. I'm not really adept at social media. I've kind of, because I was going through the trenches of getting my arm healthy, I kind of just missed that boat.
No, it's not too late.
I have a Twitter and I have an Instagram.
I was going to say, sounds like you have plenty of thoughts and opinions. It's not too late to get on that boat.
I have plenty of thoughts and opinions, but it's so funny because I feel like it's just hard for me to share them every day. Like I just, you know, when you have to go to press and you answer questions, or I do this with you and you're asking me questions, I just feel like putting my opinion out there, I'm not comfortable with that yet, which I probably should be. So that's still something I'm trying to figure out.
My money's on you. This is great. It seems in some ways like a long time ago, and it seems in some ways like this is very familiar to the player I remembered when I first started covering.
Thanks. I'm a little more mature and wiser now.
where are you off to? You're in Alabama this week. Where are you off to next week?
Well, I will be in Alabama in Dothan, playing another clay court tournament, and then after that, I'm trying to get to Europe. So hopefully I'll be able to get to Europe so I could get on the grass.
I don't say this jokingly. If there's someone out there that wants to financially back a tennis player, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they could just call you up and ask how to get in touch with me. I don't know.
All right,
I don't want to give my number on the radio.
So social media,
you know,
would be your friend here.
Yeah, social. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, and, you know, it's a great story. I feel like I believe that I can be top 50, and, you know, I have my ultimate goal, which I still believe that I can play with the best players, and I've seen it happen, and I've seen what Serena can do, and I feel like I can play just as tough as she can. And same with Venus. Look at Venus. She's my same age, and she's still out there.
Those are your contemporaries.
Yeah, and look at the men. Half of them are 30 to 35.
That's a big goal, playing at Venus and Serena level.
But in life, if you don't have goals, how fun would life be? I mean, when I'm like 45, 46, I can look back and say, I did everything I could to go and meet my second career goals. And you know what? If I did do it, it's going to be amazing. And if by some chance it doesn't happen, something else will happen, and I'll be okay with that.
You're not going to believe this. I distinctly remember you saying, and you must have been a teenager at the time, that if you reach for the if you reach for the stars, and
you
end
land
up on
the
moon.
Moon.
Is that right? You said that, right? Yeah, you land on the moon. You're still doing pretty well.
It's so funny that you remembered that. Yeah.
You
My
said
mom
that,
always
right?
told me that, no matter what.
Wait, say it again. Reach for the stars, and if you end up on the moon, it's not so bad.
If you reach for the stars, you land on the moon, that's amazing. I mean, yeah, because if you land on the moon, it's pretty cool.
that's so wild.
She told me that when I auditioned for Annie. I was a little brown-skinned 5-year-old auditioning for Annie, who had red hair and white skin, and she said, well, reach for the stars and land on the moon.
I have distinct memories of you saying that as a teenager. this was an interesting conversation. I did not know what to expect, and I wish you all the luck. It's great that you're still out there chasing the dream.
I'm still out there, and I listen to you when you do your talks, and it's nice to have an intelligent voice in tennis.
I appreciate that. Good luck. Let's stay in touch.
All right. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
All right. That was Alexandra Stevenson. I keep wanting to say Alexander Hamilton. That was Alexandra Stevenson. That was this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. I admit to being tongue-tied and speechless in several junctures there, but thankfully she picked up the slack. Didn't always know where that conversation was going, but it was an interesting perspective, and there's some interesting points in there. I think there's something to be said about careers being elongated, something to be said about the rigors of playing tennis's minor leagues, and quite apart from the issue of parentage that we discussed, it's interesting to hear the perspective of someone who was, you know, a top 20 player in 2001, 2002, and now is ranked in the 500s in her mid-30s, but is undaunted and still thinks she's capable of playing top-tier ball. Thanks again to our producer, Jamie Lasanti. You can follow me on Twitter and @John_Wertheim. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app. Hear the whole panoply of SI podcasts at the SI Network at si.com/podcasts. So, interesting podcast this week. We'll have another guest next week. As always, your suggestions, your comments, your criticism are welcome. Always a pleasure doing these, and we'll be back in a week. Have a good week, everyone. Thanks. See you next week.